I believe in winning the battle against yourself. People say, why do you say that? Because there's a lot of things you can control. When you wake up, I talk about making your bed. Make your bed. Make sure your house is clean. Make sure you get your breakfast. Make sure you shower, shave. Whatever you're doing, control that. Don't hit the snooze button. All these things are very important. That's been told a lot of times. Why don't you hit the snooze button? Because you wake up already failing. You're already behind the power curve. So what happens when you hit the snooze button? You may not make your bed. You may not do your hair the way you want it. You may not pick the right clothes out in the morning time. And I go back to this real quick. Remember how you had a job interview for a job? We've had several of them in our lives. What did you do the night before that job, weeks before the job interview, when you knew you had it? You prepared your, you know, you had a bowl out for your oatmeal, your cereal, whatever you had in the morning time. Your coffee cup was out. Your clothes were laid out. You studied. You rehearsed. You were ready. You brought your best self. You're going to war with yourself because you wanted that interviewer to see your best self. You won. You got the job. After a few months in that job, you look around. I got the job. Start to back off. The clothes aren't out. You're not ready. You're hitting the snooze button. You don't get up on time anymore. You realize that you can still have this job and not be your best self. The interview you is gone. Your job is gone. You have your job, but the interview you is gone. So winning the battle in the morning time is just that. It's that you wake up in the morning time and you own all this stuff. Because once you leave your house, the world then gets at you. And that's why I believe in not getting up in the morning time and checking your phone immediately. Everybody does that. They get up, the first thing they do is they grab their phone. Look at the phone. Maybe bad news on there. So how's your day start off? I don't go to the gym. I don't make my bed. You're caught up now on that phone. That's how your day starts. You lost control. So once you win that battle in the morning time, then once you go out, now you've won. You go outside your house. You may lose your job. You may have a bad hit, but you won something. So you're going into battle having already won something. Having already won. So then if you hit the snooze button, you go out, you just defeated already. You're behind the power curve. Now you've won something. You feel better about yourself. So now you're able to take these hits along the way.
Yeah.
So that's the mindset that I think it's important to bring with you every day you go, everywhere you go in life. And anybody, not just Navy SEALs, but anybody that can accomplish anything that is hard. The only separator is that they really want to be there. There's some people that get inspired and that inspiration moves them to try to do something. But the inspiration is very high right now in this nice environment. We're in a nice environment. The ocean's out there. I'm talking to you. If I want to go to the fucking refrigerator and get something to drink, eat, I can. I watch a movie about some badasses, you're inspired. But the second you're not in this environment and you're actually doing what inspired you, that suck factor is now real. You can't just get off your fucking couch and get a fucking shake or get a fucking box of donuts or turn the TV or go take a shit or a piss or go get your girlfriend to cuddle up. No, you're now there. And only those people who have been there a million times in their minds and have lived in that water and have suffered a million times and realize my legs may break, my knee may break, my bones will hurt. I will be the coldest I've been in my life. I will be miserable.
From unsolved mysteries to unexplained phenomena, from comedy gold to relationship fails, Amazon Music's got the most ad-free top podcasts, included with Prime. Download the Amazon Music app today.
And accept that. Because what happens is when you get in a horrible situation in life, your mind, I call it my 1 second decision. When you get in a horrible situation in life, your mind immediately says, get the fuck out of here. Everybody's does, even if you want to be there. But it starts to have all these different questions in your mind in that 1 second. And it says, okay, why are you here? Why are you doing this? Why this? Why that? And then you start to say to yourself, if you don't want to be there that bad, I have a beautiful wife at home, man. Why the fuck am I doing this, man? Like, this is stupid. This is going to get these guys injured. Like they're going to pay for this for the rest of their lives. I'm not going to break my body up to do this. Your mind starts to say, yeah, this is stupid. But if you are already knowing that this is going to happen to you, you have all the answers to these questions that your mind starts to give you when you're in suffer mode.
So your attention, for example, is mediated by unconscious forces. And you know that perfectly well. And this is another Freudian observation. You know, if you're sitting down to study, for example, your conscious intent is to study. But you know perfectly well that all sorts of distraction fantasies are going to enter the theater of your imagination nonstop and annoyingly. And there isn't really a lot you can do about that except maybe wait it out. You'll be sitting there reading and your attention will flicker away. You'll think about, I don't know, maybe you want to watch Jane the Virgin on Netflix or something like that. Or maybe it's time to have a peanut butter sandwich, or you should get the dust bunnies out from underneath the bed, or it's time to go outside and have a cigarette, or maybe it's time for a cup of coffee. Or it's like all these subsystems in you that would like something aren't very happy just to sit there while you read this thing that you're actually bored by. And so they pop up and try to take control of your perceptions and your actions nonstop. Maybe you think, well, this is a stupid course anyways. Why do I have to read this damn paper? And what am I doing in university? And what's the point of life? It's like you can really get going if you're trying to avoid doing your homework. And then you might think, well, what is it in you that's trying to avoid? Because after all, you took the damn course and you told yourself to sit down. Why don't you listen? Well, because you're a mess. That's basically why. You haven't got control over yourself at all. And no more than I have control over this laptop. Okay, so there's the memory function of the unconscious, and there's the dissolutive function. That's an interesting one. The unconscious contains habits, once voluntary, now automatized, and dissociated elements of the personality, which may lead to parasitic existence. That's an interesting one. I would relate that more to procedural memory. You know, so what you've done is practice certain habits, whatever they might be, let's call them bad habits, and you'd like those things to get under control, but you can't. So maybe when you're speaking, for example, you use like and you know, and you say a lot, and you've practiced that, so you're really good at it, and you'd like to stop it, but you don't get to, because you've built that little machine right into your being, right? It's neurologically wired, and it's not under conscious control, and anything you practice becomes that. It becomes part of you, and that's another element of the unconscious, a different part. And then there's a creative part, which is that, well, you know, you're sitting around and maybe you're trying to write something, or maybe you want to produce a piece of art or a piece of music, or maybe you're just laying in bed dreaming and you have all these weird ideas, and especially in dreams, it's like, what? Where do those things come from? And even more strange, one of the things that's really weird about dreams, and almost impossibly weird, is that you're an observer in the dream. It's like a dream is something that happens to you. Well, you're dreaming it, theoretically. So how is it that you can be an observer? It's almost like you're watching a video game or a movie, but you're producing it, at least in principle, although the psychoanalysts would say, well, no, not exactly. Your ego isn't producing it. Your unconscious is producing it. It's a different thing. It's a different thing. And of course, Jung would say, well, it's deeper than that. The collective unconscious might be producing it. It's in some sense, it isn't you exactly, or it isn't the you that you think of when you think of you. And that's the ego from the Freudian perspective, the you that you identify with. That's the ego. And outside of that is the unconscious. The id, that's more the place of impulses. And you could think about those as the biological subsystems that can derail your thinking, right? And that govern things like hunger and sex and aggression and your basic instincts is another way of putting it. And it's a reasonable way of thinking about it because these are subsystems that you share with animals. You share them certainly with mammals. You share most of them with reptiles. You share a lot of them with amphibians, and even going all the way down to crustaceans, there's commonality, for example, in the dominance hierarchy circuits. And so these are very, very old things. And the idea that you're in control of them is, well, you're not exactly in control of them. And I would say the less integrated you are, the less you're in control of them, and the more they're in control of you. And that can get really out of hand, you know. Like with people who have obsessive compulsive disorder, for example, which seems to be, I would say, the dissolutive elements in some sense of the unconscious, the way that it's portrayed here. Poor people with obsessive compulsive disorder, they can spend half their time doing things that they can't really control, and they have very strong impulses to do them, and it's very hard on them to block them. You know, they'll almost panic if those things are blocked. And then you have people with Tourette's syndrome, you know, that they'll be doing all sorts of weird dances and spouting off obscenities and imitating people without being able to control it. And sometimes a little bit of antipsychotic medication can dampen that down, but it's as if there are these autonomous semi-spirits inside of them that grip control over their behavior and make them do things. And, you know, you find that to some degree in your own life, because maybe you've become very attracted to someone, even maybe you don't want to be attracted to the person, and then you find yourself, you know, texting them when you know perfectly well that you should be going to bed, and, you know, you're in a grip of something, and you can't control it, and that's all part of the unconscious. First acted out, then represented in ritual, those would be the rituals of sacrifice, then laid out in story, then turned into a psychological phenomena, so that now we're capable of making sacrifices in abstraction, right? To conceptualize a future that we want, to let go of the things that are stopping us from moving forward, and to free ourselves from the chains of our original preconceptions. And that's laid out in these old stories as the optimal pathway of being. And there's a philosopher of science named Karl Popper, very sensible and down-to-earth person, who was talking about thinking and its nature, and he was thought about thinking in a Darwinian fashion. He said, the purpose of thinking is to let your thoughts die instead of you. It's a brilliant notion, and so the idea is something like, you can conjure up a representation of yourself. You can conjure up a variety of potential representations of yourself in the future. You can lay out how those future representations of yourself are likely to prevail or fail. You can cull the potential yous in the future that will fail, and then you can embody the ones that will succeed. You do that well simultaneously, conjuring up a representation of your current state and determining for yourself, because of your undue suffering, which elements of your pathetic being need to be given up so that you can move forward into that future. What is it that you're aiming at with that work and that sacrifice? That's the ultimate question. It's the question I was trying to address in that writing. What is it that you're trying to do? Well, you're trying to improve the future. We believe that the future can be improved. We believe that it can be improved as a consequence of our sacrificial work. And so, once again, what are the limitations? What are the limits to that? What are the necessary limits to that? I would say we don't know. I would say as well that that's actually something that the entire corpus of biblical stories is trying desperately to articulate, to figure out and articulate, right? We conjured up this remarkable idea. The future exists. We can see it even though it's only potential. We can adjust our behavior in the present in order to maximize our probability of success in the future. How best to do that? Well, the idea is something like, don't hesitate to offer the ultimate sacrifice if you want the future to turn out ultimately well. Now, obviously, that idea is clothed in metaphysical speculation and religious imagery, but it still remains an intensely practical issue, right? What is it that you could contract for, let's say, if you were willing to give up everything about you that's weak and unworthy? The proper sacrificial attitude produces a psychological state and then a social state that's a manifestation of that attitude that decreases the probability that the world will careen into hell and increases the probability that people will live high quality, meaningful, private lives in a society that's balanced and capable of supporting that. And none of that seems to me to be questionable, really. I also don't think it's anything that people don't actually know. You know, people have told me many times that when they listen to me talk, they're hearing things that they already knew but didn't know how to say. It's something like that. And this is one of those things that I think is exactly like that. I mean, I think it's at the very core of our moral knowledge, which is our behavioral knowledge and our perceptual knowledge. I mean, let's get this straight. Moral knowledge is no trivial matter. It's knowledge about how it is that you orient yourself in the world. There's no more profoundly necessary form of knowledge. Well, it's predicated on something that's exactly like this. We know that we have to make sacrifices. We know that we have to aim at what's good. So then why isn't that we don't aim at what's best and make the sacrifices that are necessary in order to bring that into play? I think it seems to me that in some sense that's self-evident. The question is why we don't do it. But there's answers to that too already in the material that we've covered. Life is hard and it hurts people. It's rife with limitation. And some of it's arbitrary, and some of it's unjust, and some of it's worse, some of it's malevolent, which is even worse, and something I haven't talked about at all in this lecture. It's not surprising that that combination of vicissitude can turn people against being. But I think even when that happens, and even when people have the kind of history that if they revealed to you, you would say, well, it's no wonder you turned out that way. The people who turn out that way still know that it's wrong. They still know that however deep their own suffering, however arbitrary their own suffering, however much that's caused by the malevolence of others, as well as the tragedy of existence, that that does not in any way justify their turning away from the good. And I believe everyone knows that. I believe that they know it implicitly, even if they don't allow themselves to know it explicitly. And I believe that if they violate that idea, then they violate themselves, and that they end up in Cain's position, which is the position of the man who's been given a punishment that is too great to bear.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.